Hello, and welcome to In the Kitchen with Brett Thorne. I'm your host, Brett Thorne, Senior Food and Beverage Editor of Nation's Restaurant News and Restaurant Hospitality, happily reporting to you from my apartment in Brooklyn, New York, where I'm back after attending conferences in Salt Lake City, Denver, Annapolis, and Napa. As I mentioned in my last podcast, it was good to get out and see people face-to-face, try new restaurants, have random conversations, and actually hang out in real life with old friends, some of whom I hadn't seen in years. But I actually can do all of that right here in New York City, which, contrary to the dire predictions at the beginning of the pandemic, has not died. In fact, it's chugging along quite well, as long as you're vaccinated. New York was the first city to issue citywide mandates requiring that anyone who wants to go inside a bar or restaurant, a gym or a theater, or serve in the police force or in healthcare or in the fire department or public schools, has to be vaccinated. For some of those jobs, you can just regularly get tested and show proof of a recent negative COVID test, but not at bars, restaurants, gyms, or theaters. And my guest in this podcast, David Rabin, is glad for that. It helps him to keep his customers and staff safe, and if anyone ever complains, and so far they haven't, he can blame the government. David Rabin operates two rooftop bars, the Skylark and Jimmy, as well as American Bar, Sona, Veranda, and the recently reopened Temple Bar, all in New York City. He also has the Lamb's Club, a fine dining restaurant set to open any day now. David Rabin has been a fixture in New York City nightlife since he opened Rex in 1990, which soon became a hotspot for supermodels, and he went on to open Lotus, which helped revitalize the city's meatpacking district at the turn of the century. David and I also went to the same college, Tufts University outside of Boston, which might not mean anything to you, but it does to me, and it's my podcast. David himself is surprised at how well business has come back, particularly in Midtown Manhattan, which relies on office workers, most of whom are still working from home, and Broadway theater goers, who are just now starting to return. Business there is down compared to 2019, but definitely not out, and his downtown spots are as busy as ever, with customers who seem immune to rising prices. Some are drinking martinis by the growler, in fact, he says. He also has noticed some changes in his customers' dining habits, which you are about to learn about right now, because here is David Rabin. How are you doing, David Rabin, oh fellow jumbo?
That's right. We share Tufts in our past. Doing well. I mean, a lot better this year than a year ago at this time.
Yeah, I didn't really enjoy 2020 very much. It wasn't great for me.
I don't think anyone in our business could possibly have enjoyed it, or in and around our business. You know, I mean, we got one place open back in July of 2020, but that was the only one. And so everything else was sort of put on hold. And as you, I'm sure, can imagine, as we all do, it was a never-ending like question of, is this going to end or not? And actually, it's still kind of going on, that question. So,
right. Well, you have stuff in sort of the Midtown area of Manhattan, which is, I think, particularly challenged. Although, I don't know. You'd know better than me.
No, I completely agree. It's funny. A journalist asked me the other day, said to me the other day, or asserted the other day, that the East Village got hit the hardest of this. And I was like, yeah, that's what was basically my reaction. I'm like, I don't know if I buy that, because we have America. I mean, I can't speak to the East Village. We're there sort of now with Temple Bar. I guess that's NoHo as of 5 days ago. But, you know, Midtown, I mean, the West Village where we have America Bar is just, it looked like nothing happened. Same in SoHo. You know, if you walk down Spring Street last summer or Prince Street last summer, you know, people are outside everywhere. But yes, Midtown, no one's in the office buildings. And I mean, as you know, Broadway is just starting to come back. So we've just reopened the Skylark Monday. 4 days ago. Surprised by the numbers in a positive way. I mean, it's not like 2019, but it's not empty at all. And we're working on getting Lamb's Club back open.
So this podcast is probably going to be aired a little bit in the future. So let's tell everybody that right now it's October 21st. So you guys opened on the 17th.
The 18th, we opened the Skylark. And it's a rooftop on 39th and 7th. That's generally pretty dependent on people being in those office buildings and people going to theater and people going to Madison Square Garden. Or people commuting through Penn Station or the Port Authority, and as I said, like, you know, we're doing 200-300 people on a beautiful day. 2 years ago, we would have seen 700 people, but we're not seeing 30 people, which is encouraging, especially on 3 days' notice. And same with Lambs. It seems like Times Square is inching back to what it was. But it really obviously needs Broadway in a big way. Sorry about those notices. It needs Broadway in a big way. And that's starting to come back. But there, the Broadway folks are having the same issues we're having, which is, we call it staff, they call it performers, cast members, whatever it may be, and back of house people for them as well. So it's a process.
Yeah. So let's go over all of the operations that you have and what's open and what's not.
Well, the places that were open, the only one that's still not open is the Lambs Club, and that's because it's in a hotel that hasn't reopened yet in the Chop Wall. The hotel's going to reopen November 1. So we're going to start very slow with just room service for hotel guests, and then as we can staff it, we'll start opening more for the public. Skylark, as I just mentioned, is open, and then downtown has been very, very good to us. American Bars, you know, we have about 60 outdoor seats. We took advantage of the heating allowances and the street dining allowances last summer, and it got busy immediately when dining was allowed, and it's really doing well, knock on wood. Sona, we opened in March. That's with a partner named Manish Goyal and with Priyanka Chopra Jonas. That's next to Gramercy Tavern, which is almost easier than telling people it's on 20th Street. Everyone seems to know what Gramercy Tavern is.
Right.
And again, super busy, opened in March. We don't have a tremendous amount of outdoor seating there, but still really busy indoors. I'm very happy with the vaccine mandate. I think everyone is in New York. And then we followed that with Veranda with Chef George Mendez. Down at what is now called the Modern House Hotel. It used to be James Soho. They switched the name when they opened in May, the hotel. We opened the restaurant and we reopened our rooftop there, Jimmy, which used to be Jimmy at the James, now it's Jimmy Soho. It's funny, the owners of the hotel were like, what do you want to change the name of Jimmy to? And I'm like, what? Like, we have 10 years of goodwill there. I'm not changing the name at all.
Keep it Jimmy.
So, and it's worked. People are so grateful and happy to be back, especially because there's, you know, there's so much outdoor space there. And we've been lucky. I mean, here it is October. What did you say it was? I've lost track. 21st. So if it's October 21st and it's, you know, 70 degrees out, it's, you know, it works to our advantage there. We also have Veranda at the restaurant. It has beautiful sort of backdoor gardens. So last night, for some friends of mine, held a book club outside by a fireplace under, you know, trees outside, and they're so happy to have that. And then just this week, well, last week, Thursday, whatever that date was, the 14th, I guess, we reopened a legendary cocktail bar that we feel extremely lucky to have sort of been allowed to restore, called Temple Bar on Lafayette. And we did it, Manish and I stumbled upon it. I mean, we always knew it was there, but we didn't realize it was available. When we were looking for a space for Sona. And we teamed up with Sam Ross and Michael from Attaboy, who are amazing, you know, and always in the sort of top five bars in the world. And so we partnered up with them to do this, you know, beautiful little, for lack of a better phrase, downtown Bemelmans. You know, that's how it feels with all the deep, rich wood and the deep, beautiful leather. It's just a dark, sexy nightlife for grown-ups kind of room. not
the attaboy, guys. Is there a Korean aspect to the food there?
Oh, not that attaboy, but
different
attaboy. That took over Milk and Honey, mm-hmm. Down on Eldridge. So they were mentees of Sasha, the great Sasha, at Milk and Honey, and then they bought Milk and Honey from him, and thought that they needed to, put their own stamp on it. So they changed the name to Attaboy, but it still ends up, you know, it's a lot of the same staff, and it still ends up in that top five list every year. So I worked with, I consulted for 3 years with Sam. We were sort of co-consultants in Vegas on a big bar project. We did three bars, or really big cocktail lounges in the Venetian. Nothing in Vegas is small. So, and got to like him so much and so impressed with him that when Temple Bar came along, we're like, we should really do this together. And it's worked out very well.
And which Sam is that?
His name is Sam Ross.
Okay.
He's just a terrific guy and so hardworking, as is his partner, Michael McElroy. They just dig in. So it's been great. So right now we're at six open with one to go and a couple, you know, potentially in the hopper. But like I said, when we started chatting a year ago, I would never have imagined that we would be this busy, and I'm very grateful. It's kind of crazy.
Well, I'm sure you remember a year and a half ago when everyone was like, well, New York's dead now. That's the end. There's no more New York. And I found that odd. Because New York's not going anywhere, but there are shifts, as you indicated. Skylark now has 200-300 people instead of 700 customers. That is, and I don't plan to go back to work in Midtown anytime soon. I'm talking to you from my apartment in Brooklyn, and you know, it works very well. We've all established that we can do that. And for New York City, I think that's fine because I'm spending a lot of money in my neighborhood, which I never
used. Right, which is great, right?
Yeah.
I think, look, what I'm hearing from most people is that they think a 3 to 4 day work week is going to return sometime in January. So we've actually started to talk about that in terms of, we're very careful at the Skylark is a good example. We're very careful about what nights we allow for buyouts, for closures, right? Because our business there is built. Everyone thinks, oh, but someone, you know, people will call and say, well, we'll give you $30,000 or $40,000 to close on a Thursday. And we say no, and they can't really understand why we would possibly say no. And it's because, and we learned this with Jimmy as well, the consistency of being open is very important to our customer. It's not like a restaurant. You know, if you call a restaurant and they say they're fully booked, okay, then you call the next restaurant because you... But with these beautiful sort of walk-up bar cocktail lounges, yeah, we start tonight. Like I was just looking before we got on the call. We have 145 reservations tonight at the Skylark. So my guess is we'll do 300 is my, you know, I'm just guessing. But point being that some nights we have, if it's a gorgeous day, we could have 500 walk-ups. And the worst thing in the world is to say to someone who's decided to take their time and maybe even a cab and some money, come to the Skylark and be told, sorry, it's a private event. So we're trying to think through in a long-winded way to answer your question. If people aren't going to be in the office anymore on Fridays, should we open our minds to the idea of Friday buyouts, which in the past we never would have done? I think it just remains to be seen what the new habits are, what the new work rules are. But I can tell you I'm sure you're seeing it in your neighborhood in Brooklyn. I live on the Upper West Side in Manhattan. I've never seen this many people during the daytime when I go, you know, walk outside my house or go to play tennis in Central Park. I mean, you would think it was Saturday afternoon and it's, you know, Thursday at noon. So, and I think people have changed their priorities a little bit.
You know, yeah.
The huge thing I've seen, and I don't know if anyone's spoken to you about this, but is the earliness at which people want to eat dinner now.
Oh, interesting.
And I think it's related, I think it's directly, you know, related to the pandemic. I mean, I think at first people were eating at home, so they were just eating earlier because what else were they going to do? Right. But then when we reopened and there was a 10 o'clock curfew for, I don't know, first 4 or 5 months of it, everyone wanted to eat by 7:30 so that they weren't getting rushed out of their table. And I think a lot of people said, oh, you know, this is kind of nice to be done with dinner at this time. So what, you know, when I was younger and going out, you know, I wouldn't even have thought to go to dinner before 8:30, 9 o'clock on a Thursday or a Friday or Saturday, because then you were going to go somewhere after.
Right.
And now everyone wants to eat at 7. So it's an interesting phenomenon. I'm curious to see if it switches back as people start, you know, delving into nightlife more, and those venues open more and more. We'll see.
Yeah, I have heard stories throughout the country of a lot more day drinking. You know, they're working from home, but they might, you know, go out. And for example, there are all these breakfast and brunch restaurants that serve alcohol, and people are happy to have a couple of Bloody Marys on a Tuesday now. So
it's interesting. Yeah, we're just talking about whether or not we're going to open the Skylark. Skylark opens at 4:30, but it's on top of a 500,000 square foot office building, and it's 31 floors of offices. And we're just talking through the idea of during, you know, maybe going 8 to 3, allowing people to work up there. And do we have the bar open, or is it just coffee and tea and, you know, light snacks? And these are all like very real world discussions we're having at the moment, you know, as you bring it up.
Yeah.
And I've definitely seen some people who had reservations for like our we don't really have a true nightlife place now. Like back when we had Lotus, we don't have like a big club or anything, but we've definitely had some people make reservations for Jimmy or some of the other spots. And I don't see them, and I'll text them the next day, say, you know, I didn't see you last night. Did I miss you? And they're like, oh no, we just drank so much during the day that we called it in the afternoon. I'm like, oh, okay. So I think you're right.
Yeah. I ordered a case of whiskey at the beginning of the pandemic and went through it pretty fast. But then after that, I realized I didn't need to do that, and I scaled back.
You might not be able to get it with the shipping problems.
Right. Well, that's another topic I'd like to talk to you about. So there are two big trends going on in hospitality these days, and one is labor and the other is supply chain stuff. So how have you been hit, and how do you cope with both of those? You just pick one, and then we'll go to the other one.
Well, I mean, the staffing has been a really horrible. I don't really understand the answer to it. I don't really know what all these younger people are doing for a living. I mean, I read the article in the Times yesterday that there's something like 10 million unfilled jobs in the United States. You know, so if not more, that might be an understatement. But they're saying it's across all industries.
Right.
And I understand a lot of the people that used to work for us, like, you know, they lived in an apartment with three people in Brooklyn. And once one person left, the other two were like, well, I don't have an extra third rent money. So they left too. I think it's going to take a while for those folks to come back to New York, but also people's expectations. We've had some crazy interviews where we finally found one, but we were looking for a GM for the Skylark. And I liked a couple of the resumes that we were sent by the recruiter. And I pulled out two in particular, you know, and she said, well, there's a problem with them. I'm like, what's the problem? Well, neither of them want to work at night. And I'm like, well, who applies for a job to run a venue that opens at 4:30 and doesn't expect to work at night? And it happens to be it's a good job because, you know, we're open only 5 days a week, and on weekends it's just for events. So it's like one of the very few GM jobs you could have that you have your weekends off. But I was just like really mystified, and I don't know if it's a new sense of my well-being comes first, which I'm not going to argue with that necessarily. But if you want to work in our industry, you're going to have to work at night. The supply chain thing has been, I can't speak to sort of things like I should be able to, but I can't tell you that we're not getting enough, you know, not enough high grade steak or enough of a certain kind of seafood that we need. But I can speak to the fact that during all, it's coming into every single discussion about like, these chairs aren't working, we should sub out these chairs. Yeah, well, the chairs you want are 6 months backed up because, you know, they're come from Asia or they come from Europe and they're locked up in a port somewhere. Trying to decide things like Christmas decorations. And I did not like the first pass at all. And the group that we're working with on it, this is for Veranda and Jimmy, they're like in a panic because they're like, well, we have to order stuff right now, otherwise there's no chance we'll get it. I'm like, it's October. But that's the way everyone's thinking. So I think it's impacting us on so many levels. And things like that, things like we bought the wrong chair, we need 10 new chairs, can't get them. Three bar stools broke, can't get them. So we'll see how much more severe it gets, but it hasn't really forced us to curtail our menu offerings yet in a significant way. Plus, it seems like every day there's 17 new tequilas being introduced. So,
yes. And like peanut butter whiskey for some reason.
Every famous person in the world has a tequila now. It's unbelievable. Some of them are actually quite good. But.
Yeah, I believe that. I'm more of a brown spirits drinker, but you know, I will try the Rocks tequila at some point.
Well, I haven't had the Rocks, but I had the Michael Jordan one, which I thought was actually very good. I think that's called Chincoro. And I'm not that big a drinker. I'm here and I'm with my Coke Zero, but it is 3 o'clock. So, yeah, so I've had a few of these that are pretty good. And we'll see which takes off. I saw that the one of the Kardashian clan just introduces one, 818, and everyone says it's actually also very good. Kendall Jenner. I'll have to give it a try.
Yeah, good for Kendall. So you run a lot of very alcohol-driven venues. Are your customers drinking differently?
More? Is that more? Does more count as differently?
More definitely counts. I don't know if they're, you know, maybe they're ordering more bougie cocktails or they're drinking cheap beer or whatever.
Actually, we're finding the opposite. We're like American Bar has this interesting crowd. It's really a restaurant. It's called American Bar, but it's sort of the best of everything you always wish you could eat but can't find in a restaurant. You know, amazing salads, filet mignon. It's almost it's very much like Polo, like the Polo Bar, or maybe like Sunset Tower Bar in LA. Really recognizable, delicious food, but with a, I mean, we're probably 60-40, 40% beverage. People are really drinking martinis, even growlers of martinis. Price does not seem to be a factor. And these are young people. This is, our audience there is, I'd say, 25 to 35, 40. I'm back, sorry, 25 to 35, 35, 40. And they don't seem to be price sensitive at all. So it's very interesting. You know, the numbers at Jimmy are extraordinary. It's as if nothing happened. And again, because it's outdoors primarily. And so we'll see. But even Sona, people are really, Johnny Sweat, who's my partner from Jimmy. He's our consultant for the beverage program at Sona, and he developed these special, gin and tonics, four different gin and tonics based on Indian cuisine and Indian culture. And people are just loving them. So yes, I'd say people are indulging, and of course we're trying to, or you know, a lot of people also went the other way and you know, found sort of a sense of wellness during this pandemic, and so we've definitely beefed up the mocktail part of our programs so that people feel they're not left out, they're not feeling left out when they want to have a cocktail.
So in I'm about to sneeze, I think. In Manhattan, how much money can you get for a spirit-free cocktail?
I think we're pricing it at 16.
Whoa.
14 to 16. It's really based on the venue. You know, our drinks at Skylark are 19. And you know, we're using all, I mean, the only thing missing from the mocktail is the alcohol component, but all right. The fresh juices are the same. And the preparation is the same, and the time. It's just not pouring in a little bit of tequila or vodka or whatever it may be. Right. So, you know, in Manhattan, you can get those prices, especially on a rooftop. You know, I mean, the views from the Skylark and Jimmy are insane, and people are not really that price sensitive up there. We just crossed, and I'm very curious about it. I've never wanted to do this before. Excuse me. We just crossed the $20 drink cocktail barrier at Temple Bar. We have a few on there that are 21. I mean, as I said, Michael and Sam have a reputation for being among the best bar owners in the world. So they wanted to push the envelope a little bit. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous room. I'm getting a lot of texts with people saying this is sexy AF, which, you know, I'm sure your listeners know what that means.
Yes, but we understand AF.
Yes. So no one seems to be blinking at the cost. I was always, it's funny though, I had to realize that part of my hesitation is sort of moot now. I never wanted us to go beyond 19 because I wanted to make sure bartenders got tipped. And now that 90% of our sales are credit card, if not more, having that dollar is irrelevant because no one's giving a 20 anymore. Everyone's paying in credit card. So I was always very sensitive to the idea that we never charge an even number because I wanted to make sure there was always an odd dollar there that they would for sure leave. But that's a throwback to the fact that I've been in this business too long.
Yeah, a dollar is not enough for a $20.
It is not. It is
not. That is a rude tip.
It's a rude tip, but I was always scared that if we called it just 20, someone would just put down two 20s for two drinks and walk away.
Right.
But since everyone's using credit card, it's become irrelevant.
So what moved you past the $21 mark? Was it premium alcohol or just the ability to charge more? Do you guys have a set for cost or do you just figure out?
It's all those things. It's all those things. I mean, rents are higher. I mean, it's the legend, if you will, of Temple Bar. People just seem to be so happy to be there. I mean, that was a 25-year run with that beautiful, just little chameleon out front, never a sign. And when I read all the articles and all the stories and bios of Dr. Schwartz, who created it, created NoHo Star, he wanted to do the Oak Room downtown. He felt like, why do I have to go uptown to have a beautiful room and a beautiful environment to have a cocktail? Yeah, it's all those factors. I mean, costs have gone up for sure on everything. And there is on every, you know, from paper towels to napkins to, you know, you name it. We have a heavy duty ice program. We have these amazing mixologists. I think we might have, you know, some of the best bartenders in New York. So yeah, all that went into the factory. And there was a lot of cost to build it out, to be honest. You know, inflation has definitely hit the construction industry as well. They're in the same boat we all are, right? They don't have enough people, qualified people to build your space. So we were building at a very rough time when everyone wanted their best teams on there to do their build outs. Plus we're using a couple of nights a week, we're using DJs and we don't have a cover charge. And we don't do bottle service. We don't have table minimums. I don't believe in a lot of that stuff. Try to stay away from it. I think the longevity of Jimmy, I mean, look, Jimmy's in year 11. That's a rare thing in New York City. And I think part of it is attributable to the fact that we don't really bang people on the head. We don't say, you must buy three bottles. That was never our model. And it won't be the model at Temple Bar. Well, so we have to make sure. Go ahead.
I was going to say, if they're going to fork over $16 for a drink without any alcohol in it, then you don't need to have a minimum.
Right. Right. No. And we also, there's a level of trust, and that's worked in our favor, you know, that people are coming to a certain venue and they understand you, that they can't just milk a table for 3 hours with one cocktail or a gin and tonic. It used to happen to us. This is going to ancient history now for your people. But when we had Lotus, 2000, 2001, 2003, 2004, whatever, it went to about 2007, we did have that problem where we didn't do bottle service. We had to put table minimums on people we didn't know because they would come. There was such crazy energy in the room and they would come and just order one drink and try and sit for 4 hours. And at the end of the night, we were like, how do we pay everybody? You know, we have eight security guys here. We have DJs. We have, you know, three managers. So that was more being forced into it. But I never liked it as a business model. Like, oh, we're going to open this venue and each table is going to generate X amount of dollars. And I didn't think there was much soul to that model.
Can I get tap water at your place?
Of course you can. Actually, we give it to you at Temple Bar. We give it to you right away. And it's twofold. To be honest, we give it to you because we like to give it to you. But we also, these drinks take a little while to be made. And we don't want people to be sitting there feeling like they've got nothing to, you know, quench their thirst. So we're following the old Temple Bar mandate, which was every table gets freshly popcorn as soon as they sit down, and water.
That's great. Yeah, I've been to some rooftop bars in Manhattan where if you want water, you have to buy bottled water.
Nah.
And
we're not fans of that either.
Yeah, one was a new place. I don't remember the name, and even if I did, I wouldn't say because that's rude. But the manager came by and was like, "How is everything?" And I said, "Well, I have some notes." And he ended up.
We're looking for. We're always and I give this spiel all the time when we talk to developers and stuff like that. Like, look, if you're looking for the white star, immediate, you know, $100,000 weeks or $200,000 weeks or whatever that may be, you should be talking to us. You know, if you want the, you know, I always say the tortoise and the hare. I'd much rather be the tortoise. I'd much rather, you know, build business incrementally, slowly over time, based on quality, and people having a great time and word of mouth, and be there 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years later, then do that, you know, rape and pillage basically price wise,
right.
You know, and then you wake up 2 years later and everyone's moved on to whatever's next.
Right.
And we never wanted to do that.
So how did you get into this business, David? I should know this, but I don't.
Depending on the year, but let's call it basically a happy accident. I mean, there's definitely been years where I was like, what the hell was I thinking? But, I was as you know, went to Tufts and, I was a lawyer. And one of my closest friends from college was a derivatives trader before anyone knew what that was. Not that I necessarily know what it is today, but he was swapping derivatives in 1986. Whoa. and miserable. And we would run into each other, at various, you know, sort of, you know, we're both young single guys running around New York. We run into each other at dinners and various parties. And I had a little bit of an entertainment law part in my world. I was mostly doing commercial real estate. And so I started getting invited to these kind of parties that you read about, but you have no idea how to get in. And then all of a sudden I was in because I was representing an artist at the time. And my partner was there because he was dating a really famous model. And so he was getting invited to everything. And we kept seeing each other at these various events or at the moment, the sort of nightclub of the moment at that time was Nell's down on 14th Street, Keith McNally's spot. And I don't know, third or fourth time we ran into each other, we sat down and started chatting. We looked around the room and we're like, we just started talking about how much we didn't like our jobs. And we couldn't imagine doing it for the next 30 years. And it was sort of the naivete and sort of, you could call it bravery or you could call it stupidity of being 28 or 29 in New York and not having any real responsibilities, no families yet. And we just sort of joked around and said, we should quit and do one of these places. And a couple of days later, we spoke on the phone and I was like, were you serious? Because I was kind of serious. It's like, yeah, I was kind of serious, but I was afraid you weren't. And we sort of shook hands on it. We both left our jobs. And I took a few months off to go read and play tennis and run and no phone and no TV. And only two people knew how to reach me, my mom and my business partner and my girlfriend at the time, who's now my wife. So I guess that's three people. But we came back to New York and opened a place called Rex in 1990. And we really didn't know what we were doing business-wise, but it was a strange moment in time. It was the exact moment of the real sort of emergence of supermodels, the Linda and Naomi Christie, Cindy Crawford moment, if you will, like in the George Michael video. And those were all my partner's close friends.
Oh, that's handy.
It was very handy. And so we opened this place up, and we ended up having a couple of parties for some of these women for their birthdays or, you know, for fashion campaigns or whatever, and doesn't take long for word to get out. I mean, today it would be immediate, right? It would be an Instagram and TikTok in 3 seconds, but word started to get out that there was this small little supper club on 6th Avenue called Rex, and for some reason it was filled with all these famous people. And I, you know, I used to look around and kind of pinch myself because a year earlier I was like reading 1,000-page leases all night in a law firm office, and here I am running this crazy nightclub, not knowing what I'm doing, barely sleeping. I do remember the very first night we locked up, we didn't know what we were doing, and it took us to like 6:30 in the morning to close. And I got out of the subway on West 72nd Street where I was living at the time and saw all the former me's on their way to work as I'm trying to go home to get some sleep. So that's how it started. And Will and I worked together for over 20 years. About 7, 8 years ago, he decided to have a third career change and move to Massachusetts, but we're still super close. I mean, we met at age 18 in the dorms at Tufts, insanely enough.
Which so dorm, do you remember?
Houston Hall.
Oh, Houston.
Yeah.
Uphill. Big dorm.
Yeah, we lived one floor apart from each other, and he used to make fun of me apparently because I was playing lacrosse back then, and I always had a lacrosse stick in my hand when I would leave because I was going to practice, and he was sort of like, "Who's this idiot who carries a lacrosse stick all day?" And we laughed about it after we became friends. But I guess I guess I was still in my little Long Island Jewish jock mode back then, so he was giving me grief.
Well, I don't know if Medford at the time really was dangerous, but certainly we were told that it was dangerous. So walking around.
I got chased once or twice late at night, maybe when I shouldn't, you know, like I would go to go get a slice at 2 a.m. Why can't I remember the name of the guy? I think his name was Anthony, but he had that little, well, you were downhill, so you probably didn't go to the same places, but.
Was it Espresso's? Because that's where everyone was.
Yes, exactly right. That's where it was. Thank you. That's right where it was. And so I used to go there sometimes, you know, starving at 1:32 in the morning. And once or twice I had a sprint home. I was like, you know, cars would do the UE and come chasing after us. I was like, wow. So yeah, I think it's funny. When I went to show my son colleges a couple of years ago, I couldn't believe how gentrified Somerville and Medford were.
Yeah, they're fancy. Well, you should have brought your lacrosse stick with you to get pizza.
Yeah, probably should have.
So, what's next for you? Or is it still, you know, trying to rebuild and come back from a horrible?
It's all that. I mean, it's, you know, in our business, and I think it's like a lot of businesses, there are so many things that might happen that then don't. So I do know that Lambs is next because we're like in 2 hours, we have our first tasting from a new potential, executive chef. I don't know the date, but I'm already finding myself personally a little bit maxed at this moment, you know, trying to get, and part of it relates to what we talked about earlier, and I just didn't finish that part, but the fact that everyone's eating in this condensed period of time between 7 to 9, has limited my ability to get to all these places and do what I'd like to do, which is say hi and thanks, because, you know, it ends up being very unsatisfying if I run into Sona for 8 minutes and say, "Hey, Brett, good to see you," you know, and then race out to go to American Bar. So I'm hoping people expand their dining period so that I can, you know, say hi to some more folks and then staying up a little later because the Temple Bar is really, you know, gets, I mean, it's very busy right after work, which we did not expect, which is very interesting. I mean, it's packed at 6 o'clock. And it's, you know, for us now, it's about extending it to the later hours because we're finding that people are going home earlier than they used to go home. So, but again, it's 5 days old. So we'll see what patterns evolve. But yeah, no, I'm definitely, new things come across come across email all the time, and some of them are interesting, and we definitely have the conversation, but sometimes the project goes to somebody else, sometimes we don't have the team for it. We just met with some people from LA yesterday who are interested in American Bar, but I think it would work great out there, but it was the first meeting, so no, not really sure.
Well, I imagine as nightlife comes back to New York, we have Broadway reopened, opening. We have, I guess there's live music now. I don't even know, but we'll certainly be having more.
I've seen a bunch of people posting from jazz clubs. I think people are definitely doing that. And of course, there have been the big concerts at the Garden and at Barclays. So
then maybe people will stay out later and go to the shows.
I hope so. I hope they'll, you know, most people I know when they go to something like that, they want to go out somewhere after. I think also as historically, we used to get big hits, and we'll see if it happens now, after benefits, and benefits seem to be back. a lot of times people are out at these, you know, 800,000 per, you know, or 1,000 person benefits, and now it's 10 o'clock and they're all dressed up and they want to, you know, still go out and have one more drink. And historically, we used to do very well from those. So we'll see. Not official after parties, but just sort of 30 people saying, hey, let's go over to the Skylark and get one more. So we'll see if that starts to happen now that people are back at benefits.
Well, and the holidays are coming up, so there's going to be a lot of going out and drinking.
It's amazing. It's amazing how many requests we're getting for the holidays. Really amazing. I keep myself on a BCC for the incoming events emails at most of the places, just so I see the traffic. Mm-hmm. And occasionally I see, like even this morning I saw an email from a company that I guess that I know the CEO, and he didn't know I was involved in this particular venue. And so I immediately, then I can tell our event manager, hey, that's actually a friend of mine. He just doesn't realize where he wrote or where his assistant reached out to. So the traffic for those is crazy. I was not expecting it. But I think people are all figuring by then everyone will be double vaxxed and maybe even triple vaxxed, if that's a saying yet. I'm hoping to be triple vaxxed soon. I just have to go over to the pharmacy and get it. And so, yeah, I think people are, you know, look, I think most offices, if they are coming back second week January. So by December, I think in companies, people feel a real loss of seeing their colleagues. I mean, I know we can do it like this, and I think it's not the same. It's not the same. I think it falls heaviest too on the young people, because I think it's a lot of those impromptu interactions that when you really make an impression on somebody, you know, like a young lawyer or a young person in an investment bank or something, if they're not running into the guy 20 or the woman 20 years older than them and in the elevator and getting that 10 minutes of like interpersonal connection, they can't get that when they're on Zoom with 30 people. And so I think people really want to see each other, and maybe the holidays are going to be for a lot of people the first time they will.
Yeah, we're planning, trying to figure out ways that we could maybe all go into the office once a month and then go out and drink and whatever, just to see each other. And there are a whole bunch of conferences and stuff happening now because they couldn't mm-hmm. happen in the summer and the spring.
Right, right.
So I'm going to a conference next week and then another one the week after. And I was at one last week or the week before. And it's really different. I'd forgotten that, you know, if you hang out with people in real life, there's all sorts of serendipitous conversations and things that do not happen via video.
Right. And I, you know, we have our relationships established, but it's still, if I'm not talking to young people, I don't know what the hell's going on. Right.
Right.
So I'm lucky I have one in the house, but that's helpful. And I talk to all our staff all the time at all the venues, but if I was in a law firm and I never got to talk to the senior partner and I never got his perspective on something without a formalized, okay, we'll Zoom each other at 3 o'clock, I think that's awful. So hopefully we'll be back in some ways like that.
So, well, and certainly New York didn't die. New York's doing fine.
It did not. And, you know, it's funny. There were two folks, old friends of mine from the fashion industry, were at Temple Bar last night, and they were talking about exactly that. And they were kind of like, screw those people who, you know, left. Like, you know, these people are definitely like New York or nowheres, you know, that I was talking to last night. And I know a lot of people who've had moving regret. I don't know about you, but I've seen a lot of people who a year ago went to Miami and now they're starting to move back. And they're like, we thought it was one thing and it's just not, you know, it's great for a month, but can't make a life here.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny when I leave town to go to these conferences or whatever, and people say, oh, New York, is it terrible in New York? And I say, no, infection rates are really low. Vaccination rates are high. People are going out eating and drinking and, you know.
Yeah. I'd much rather be here than a lot of the states that I read about or watch on the new, you know, the 6:30 news, you know, that, I mean, my poor housemate from Tufts, Danny Gelber, is the mayor of Miami Beach. And he had all these issues back in the height of the pandemic during spring break when people were just pretending that there wasn't a pandemic. You know, when I read about these states that, you know, don't want to have mask mandates or even California, I don't think has a vaccination mandate to eat in restaurants. And I was reading in the Times yesterday that in London, it's up to each theater as to whether or not you have to be vaccinated to go to that theater. And I'm like, who would go sit next to someone you don't know in an enclosed environment for 2.5 hours with no mask, having no idea if they're vaccinated or not? Right. I mean, I guess some people are doing it, but I'm not signing up for that program.
Yeah, I agree with you on the mask mandate. It's a pleasure to walk into a bar or a restaurant. And I mean, where I'm a regular, they already know I'm vaccinated and have ID.
Right.
If not, I happily show them my pass and my ID.
We haven't had any reaction at all. In fact, it's more the other. It's more of the question of are you, and of course we're following it. I think it was one of the great things that the city and state did was mandate it so that it took it out of our hands, you know, because so many times they leave it to your discretion and then you're the bad guy. Well, in this case, it's there's no choice, and it's made it much easier for us.
Well, David Rabin, I've taken up a lot of your time, and I appreciate your giving it.
It's always a pleasure, Brett. Thank you so much.
Likewise.
And nice to see you virtually, and I hope to see you soon in real life.
I think in real life that's going to happen soon. And
okay, great.
I'm looking forward to it.